This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
Jadeveon Clowney is about 4 months away from being the NFL's version of Garrett Cole. And in case you missed it, Garrett Cole just got minted. He got a 9-year, approaching $400 million contract that was put together. Absolutely incredible. Top shelf deal. Good for him. And look, Jadeveon Clowney is going to be the top guy on the NFL free agent market. And the Seahawks are not going to be able to re-sign him unless he chooses to before. If Clowney wants to go into free agency, he's going to go into free agency. Seattle's going to face a huge choice about whether or not they want to reinvest in him.
And while I feel very comfortable with the idea of extending Clowney, a lot of that has to do with the fact that I have been covering him basically since his rookie season in the NFL. But I am even growing some reservations because, yet again, it's another injury that is slowing him down. An injury that we have seen him deal with twice before, both in college at South Carolina and with the Houston Texans, a sports hernia. Are you willing to give a guy that has had some injury issues in the past, in addition to 4 knee surgeries, these hernia issues, that big-time kind of deal? And we'll see over the next couple of games how much he can do to change how they feel about giving him a big-time deal. But it's a really difficult question to answer right now, Danny.
My reluctance to pay a top shelf extension, $24-25 million a year extension. He's certainly going to set what DeMarcus Lawrence and Frank Clark got as contracts in this past offseason. That's going to be the floor of what he's going to be asking for. My reluctance or hesitance to say sign me up for that is not based on Clowney at all. It's based on Seattle's defense. And to me, it's not just Clowney. To me, there's a lot for this defense to prove over the final 3 weeks of the regular season and into the playoffs, which Seattle's almost certain to reach. There's a lot to prove to convince me, if I was running the team, that this is the defense that I want to reinvest in, because they're not good right now. And generally, re-signing players to preserve a defense that's not good is not the recipe for making that defense better.
Right. They've been really confusing over the last month. They have that game against the San Francisco 49ers. They play so well against the Philadelphia Eagles, and they did a pretty good job against the Minnesota Vikings. But then you saw them against the Los Angeles Rams. If you had watched the tape of the game that the Rams had played the week before against the Cardinals were generating a whole lot more pressure on that Rams offensive line than the Seahawks were able to manage. 0 sacks in the game, only 4 quarterback pressures. You add that up to the Seahawks only having 29 sacks on the season, they only have 23 sacks on the season, which is good for 29th in the league. There are a lot of things that you have to wonder about with this defense going forward. And my question back to you, Danny, is, okay, we don't feel very good about this Seahawks defense, but Russell Wilson's in his prime.
Yes,
and
he is.
What happens if you decide to yourself, okay, we're going to move on from Jadeveon Clowney. We're going to move on from Jaron Reed, who is also a free agent this offseason. What does the defense become, and how difficult would it be to rebuild your front 7 in a year where Michael Kendricks is also a free agent?
The fear that it might get worse is the number one recipe for sustained mediocrity in America.
It is.
The fear that things might get worse is the reason you have Jared Goff signed to the contract that he is. That feeling of, I don't know if this guy's it, but I just know that I don't have anybody better than him lined up, and so I better cover my hind parts. Otherwise, that fear of what happens next, you've got to go with what you believe. Like, do you believe that Jadeveon Clowney is the cornerstone for a great defense? Because if you don't, I'm not sure if you pay him that money. And Seattle, the one thing that Seattle, the Seahawks, have done better than anything else, even better than their draft picks, even better, is that they have not paid good players great money. The guys that they've given great money to have been great players. Like, really, almost as a rule, the one exception being Percy Harvin, and that deal didn't work out, and I don't think that had a football talent. That was entirely in his headspace or his willingness to hand out black eyes. And you've got a question with Jadeveon Clowney. And it's a legitimate question. It's not about his personality. And it's not about his why isn't this defense better? And if you start sinking money into it because you've already got Bobby Wagner making a ton of dough, and if now you've got Jadeveon Clowney, and, oh, by the way, maybe Jaron Reed, are they going to be better next year? I'm not sure that they're going to be better next year, and this defense needs to get better.
I think you throw Kendricks in there as well, too, to that conversation with how well he has played this season. And you mentioned Jared Goff. I don't know if it's fair to put Goff in the same kind of stratosphere as a guy like Clowney, because a guy like Goff, you're so terrified of the unknown, and you're talking about the quarterback position, where defensively, even if you're not 100% sure of a guy, I think it's a little bit different when you throw a lot of money at a guy when you've had him in-house for a year and you can see all of his habits and you can see what he is. Because defensively, you're just going to have a different impact than somebody along the lines of Jared Goff. Statistically, too, if you look at some of the big contracts that have been given out to defensive players over the last couple of years, to guys like Von Miller, who's not having the best of seasons this year, and some others, and this was a post that I made for 710sports.com about a month ago about why the Seahawks should give Jadeveon Clowney the long-term contract, you're not going to see necessarily the numbers, but I believe he can be a foundational piece of this defense. The big problem is he has not necessarily proven definitively that he can be a foundational piece. I am really going off of my own personal belief. I don't know how John Schneider feels about it. John Schneider has to answer the question, too, of what to do with those other guys. If you have a couple of guys potentially leaving, though, this offseason, do you have the ability?
What's the risk? They're going to get worse?
But that's the problem.
I mean, honestly, honestly, are you really that scared? That defense is not particularly good right now.
Is it bad?
That fear, it might be. It legitimately... I thought that it had turned a corner, and I thought it had improved. And then maybe it's just that the Rams are a bad matchup. But even as we go through and talk about this, and you say, oh, Kendricks is in there, and he's thrown in with Jaron Reed and Jadeveon Clowney, and you've already got Bobby Wagner, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, you're going to have an old defense. And didn't we just see this team that was tough to get to the perimeter on the Rams, which might be because they're not fast, which might be because, in part, they're old?
And you mentioned Bobby Wagner. What are we getting for the money that Bobby Wagner is being paid this season?
He has not had his best season.
He hasn't.
I'm not willing to say that, okay, that was a mistake and you shouldn't have done it, because at some point you've got to invest in leadership, and at some point, but
right.
That in some ways underscores the risk of paying Clowney, because if a guy you felt as certain about as Bobby Wagner, you get halfway through, three quarters of the way through the first year on this contract, because he's going to be here for another couple years, and you're like, ooh, I don't know. We're not really getting the big return on that. Aren't you essentially potentially throwing good money after bad when you say, well, man, we've got to spend to keep this defense intact, because if we don't bring back Clowney, that's the recipe. Those are the decisions that bad teams make, I think.
Yeah.
Where it's all of a sudden you're paralyzed and like, I don't know if we're going to get better. You should pay to keep together good units. You should pay to keep together a defense like the Seahawks had in 2013 and 2014. I don't know that you should pay to keep together a defense that's playing like this.
The secondary has been better. The front seven, it's been so sporadically good this year. And when it does actually have an impact on a game, it's been few and far between. And really, we saw it over that three-game stretch. That was really the apex of what this Seahawks front seven can be. I think the real tough way to look at it going forward, though, is what's the realistic impact that you're going to get from an outsider that you bring in from free agency? For the most part, when a guy goes from one team to another, he's not going to be as good, because he's going to be changing schemes. He's going to need to adapt. Off seasons are shorter. It takes a lot longer to, I think, pick up a defense than it did maybe years ago, when guys were there essentially practicing a lot more during the offseason. But the new CBA has changed things on that front. And how do you feel about drafting guys when you brought in a first-round draft pick that cannot figure out a way to get on the field in a year?
Well, he's eventually going to get better, Paul. And at least he's not making very much money. And that's a sunk cost, and I don't need to worry about him because he's not yet a free agent.
Very spin zone.
Yeah, absolutely. You can look at it. Hey, he'll work things out and you'll eventually get it. You're right. I don't know that there's an immediate improvement that's on there. And I guess that's why I think that what's the most on the line through these final three regular season games and into the playoffs, it's up to the defense. It's up to those defensive players to perform in a way that makes you want to reinvest in the defense. Like, that's if they have an uneven finish to the regular season and they flame out in one game, I think I would err on the side of I'm not going to pay to keep that group together. And if Jaron Reed can come back on a shorter term contract and something that's not that top of market, absolutely. But I'm not going to pay a premium to keep together a group that wasn't necessarily good this season.
And that's a fair way to look at it. I just look at where the Seahawks are with Russell Wilson. And, yeah, the defense isn't very good. I do think it could get worse. I do think it could get worse than it has been this season, and I don't want to be in that spot because we've seen the offense really struggle the last couple of weeks when the whole weight of the team has been on its shoulders.
It's Danny and Gallant. We're going to have a blast today. We've got Michael Bumpus coming in for Blue 42. That's at 8 o'clock, but right now we're going to tell you what to watch for.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
Gerrit Cole, New York Yankees, 9-year, $324 million contract. That's an awful lot of loot. And this is my favorite headline that I saw this morning. It was Buster Olney on ESPN.com. He was like, Brian Cashman can go take a vacation now. Yes, because it was such hard work stacking up millions. This wasn't hard work. You just go to the bosses and say, how many beans do I have to throw at this guy? Oh, turns out I can back up the Brinks truck. Fantastic. There we go.
It's really hard to genuflect in front of Scott Boras, who tweets out through his little puppet, John Heyman, about all the mystery teams that are supposedly offering huge deals.
You be careful, man.
Heyman
will come down and hunt you down.
Yeah, what will he do? Block me? Great. Wow, I'm not going to get Scott Boras news. Wow.
Have you seen where Boras gets interviewed on ESPN where he's holding the ESPN microphone? I was like, what, are you the anchor? Like, shouldn't someone be interviewing? Why are you holding the ESPN microphone? This is just awkward.
It's nice to see Gerrit Cole finally wearing a baseball team's hat again after wearing the Scott Boras hat after the end of Game 7 of the World Series. It's, I think, on brand for the Yankees to get back to doing what they do best, which is telling
money
the rest
with
of
people.
Right. It's like telling the rest of baseball, watch this, you pores. And then they give Gerrit Cole this giant contract. But I'm really looking forward to 4 years from now, this looking as bad as the Jacoby Ellsbury contract looked. Unfortunately, we're going to have to wait those 4 years.
Does he have to shave his hair? Like, he can't have the lobster tail Dwayne Schintz.
Oh, definitely not. You can't have fun in New York. No, you have to be serious. You have to take your life seriously now. And yeah,
well, at least you have to groom. Yes, at least he has to groom.
This lettuce is nice.
It's gross.
What to watch for.
I dispute that notion as someone
with
gray
hair.
I dispute that notion. Oh, yes.
Hanging out the back?
Listen, bring it back. Bring back
no,
the flow.
No, that's disgusting. That's not even lettuce. That's romaine.
Is romaine bad? Is it romaine
better? No, it's great. It's awful. It's horrendous.
Better than iceberg lettuce. The Seahawks are bringing in three running backs for tryouts in the wake of Rashad Penny's injury. Xavier Turner, Matthew Daines, and Nick Brossett. Which I think means, Danny, that all the good things that we heard Pete Carroll say about C.J. Procise, it might be wishful thinking.
And they've also going to need some depth because Procise hasn't been exactly a guy known for his durability over the past 2.5 years. It's a bummer that Penny's gone. We heard the updates yesterday, that he's expected to be back in time for training camp. We'll hear more from Pete Carroll coming up today, his press conference at 12:30. But, yeah, suddenly you're going to have some depth questions at running back because, although Travis Homer,
doesn't he deserve a shot?
Travis Homer absolutely does. When he had the fake punt, I think he was the second fastest player in the league that week. He was clocked at, like, 21 miles an hour, which... There's a lot of stupid things, like I don't trust for a second the AWS catch probability statistics, but clocking who's the fastest in miles an hour, that's something I can get behind.
I think Wyman did a film study on Travis Homer, and I'm going to have to check that out.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that Wyman timed himself running to see how many miles an hour he could go now.
I want to know how far I could go, fast I could go.
You think you're faster than Wyman?
I mean, careful. Yeah. I mean, don't. Careful. Shouldn't I? I mean, I'm 30. Shouldn't I feel that way?
Careful.
Okay.
As an NFL linebacker.
That's a former NFL linebacker.
What to watch for.
Oh, coming in the last, you're going to get yourself in trouble. The man thinks he can beat up a bear, Wyman does.
Well, that's like NFL, I'm not talking about beating someone up. I'm just talking about running.
The NFL intends to do a top-down review of officiating. This comes from Judy Batista after the season. This, to me, is... There's two things that I am absolutely baffled about in the NFL. Why do they like to make their officiating such a subject of controversy? They're the reason that Mike Pereira and now Dean Blandino, those guys were given birth to in the league offices by their wanting to explain and over-officiate everything after the fact. And now they're just going to engage every time. How do we improve officiating? The second thing is, as if it's a mystery, do people think officials have gotten, like, immediately bad? Like, all of a sudden there's an officiating? No, they're being asked to do too much, and they're missing more because of it. You can't do more with less. You can't. It doesn't work. Save your money on your review. I just told you what's wrong.
You can't do more with more because we have so many angles. We have so many replays. We have so many cameras. I mean,
you want to review each play by instant replay? Because that's the direction this is going.
I really...
Everybody will have a play, and then we'll wait 2 minutes, and then we'll decide what happened on that one, and then we'll play the next play.
I really wonder if there is a way to combine what we have from a replay perspective with people that are not on the field and people that can respond quickly in the moment and make decisions that help out the referees on the field. Because I do think that a lot of the referees on the field are unfortunately in a really no-win scenario where they can't win with all these replay angles that everyone can see on television.
That is Danny and Gallant. So what to watch for? We got the Morning Drive with the Professor, John Clayton. That begins now.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the Professor, John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, the Seahawks brought in a trio of running backs to work out, to get a look at. I'm curious about how they feel about C.J. Procise. Do you think that Travis Homer might actually get a chance playing running back as opposed to just being on special teams?
Yeah, I think so. Because, Procise, I'm pretty sure now, will be out there a lot on third downs in the passing downs. And then maybe what you do is you bring Homer. Because remember, if you look at the way the season has gone, and particularly because of his special teams play, Homer's been active and Procise hasn't. And so I would think that there's a chance that they can slide in there, do some backup stuff. Although, you know, the main backup's going to be C.J. Procise. He's got the experience, and particularly as you're going down a stretch, you want a guy with experience. But no, I think you'll see a little bit more of Travis.
John, a lot of talk about Le'Veon Bell, the Jets, him having the flu. This sounds like a weird story. Do you think Le'Veon Bell's back in New York?
Not if Adam Gase is, no. I think, again, the only reason that he might be back is if they have difficulty trading his contract. And so you get the feeling, and, you know, I know here's Le'Veon, he comes back, and he was sick, and so they scratch him from the game, and he goes bowling, he gets a 251, and now all of a sudden he's saying, you know, I'm not getting as many carries as I should. Well, guess what? It's like, you know, Adam Gase doesn't necessarily likes to overuse running backs or use them to a certain point. He doesn't believe in a $14 million running back. And so you can see they don't believe in him, and they've got to find some way to get this thing to part.
It did lead to a very hilarious exchange in which Adam Gase explained that Le'Veon Bell was bowling because he'd been told not to go to the team hotel.
Mm-hmm. We didn't want him coming to the hotel or locker room. He was still contagious. Really? That wasn't his fault that we said that he was still contagious. And that's what the doctors told him. I'd rather him not be. I'd rather be him at home just getting better. But that'll be a conversation we have. I mean, we have a late start today, so I'll have a chance to talk with him.
So you won't discipline him or anything?
What am I going to discipline him for?
I
can't tell him this. You have to stay in your house.
Put a bracelet on his leg.
That just cracked me up. Like, I'm supposed to tell him, you have to stay in your house, stay in your home. Do you think there's a chance Gase gets canned?
I think there is, yeah. I mean, depending on how they finish, and they're certainly not finishing well. I mean, they barely beat the Miami Dolphins, but at least they beat them. I mean, you realize he's the first coach in NFL history to go seven games into the season and lose to two winless teams, an 0-7 Dolphin team and an 0-11 Bengal team. You know, that doesn't help. I know that the owners come back and said that, they're standing by him for next year. I hope they do. But, no, I still think that he has to be reviewed after the season because it's been a bad season. And, you know, just like Matt Patricia in Detroit, you know, you bring him in, now it's a second year, and the Detroit Lions among the worst defenses in football. You know, defense is his specialty, offense is a specialty of the Jets, and they're one of the worst.
With all the teams that the Seahawks have played over the last couple of weeks, it's a very underwhelming opponent they're going up against on Sunday. The Carolina Panthers have fired their head coach, Ron Rivera. Perry Fuel is in charge. Cam Newton is done for the season. I'm really curious about their quarterback situation. It seems like going forward, Cam Newton probably won't be with the team next season because owner Dave Tepper seems to want to go in a different direction. But they did draft Will Greer this offseason. Is there any reason for them to continue to put Kyle Allen out there, especially for this game? Because it doesn't really feel that they're convinced that he can be the guy going forward.
No, they'll try him out, but I think that Perry Fuel just wanted to get to see if there's a chance to get a victory because they're on a five-game losing streak. And you've got Kyle Allen, who has now lost six out of his last seven games. So my guess would be they'll play him this week, and then Greer will get a chance to play in the final two games. But, I thought there was a decent chance that they go to Greer this week, but I think Perry just wants to see if there's any chance that they can win. It's a home game, and so maybe there's their thought that they can do it, but at some point they got to get Greer in there.
All right, Professor. Earl Thomas thinks that opponents are targeting Lamar Jackson's legs and officials need to protect him more. Do you think that he's got any case for that?
I think there's a possible case because just like we watched with Cam Newton, I mean, there's a distinction because at some point the quarterback doesn't have the quarterback benefits as far as protection, and you become a runner, and the runner, you know, you can go get hit and all those different things. And so I think what he's probably done is watch some of the plays with him running so much where Lamar gets hit and gets hit in the legs. And so I think it is something to watch. And I think in the case of Earl, you know, and just like any running quarterback, I mean, you want to try to get your team to help protect you. And so he says it. Will the officials do anything? Probably not. But, it's at least it's a nice warning.
Ravens are playing the Jets. That's tomorrow night. Should the Ravens rest Lamar Jackson if his quad's hurting him?
If it's bad, yes. But no, I think that he's the starting quarterback. And so you want him to go out there as best he can, just like Russell Wilson. And I imagine that Lamar's mindset is the same as Russell Wilson. So, but if you start to, you know, ease into an easy victory, then I think then you take him out and put in RG3.
John, what's the NFL's process when a referee, a ref crew, has a particularly bad outing? And, for example, the referee crew in the Patriots and Chiefs game on Sunday.
They just basically, you know, talk to them and give them the grades. And, you know, the grades are satisfactory enough to let them know if they're doing good, if they're doing bad. And so it's not a matter of a reprimand. I mean, if you're really bad, then there's a chance that maybe, you know, you could get some suspension. But that just doesn't happen in this league. But, I mean, the grades speak for themselves. And if they get graded bad, they know it.
And the NFL is planning to do a review of basically all things refereeing this offseason. Ultimately, what could they possibly come up with as a change going forward to make referees less of a story, because they have been a huge story this season?
Well, they're going through even a tougher time right now. I mean, when they talk about top to down, they're talking about they're going to review Al Riveron to see how he's done as the supervisor officials, and they'll see if there's enough structure there and what they need to do. But see, this is only going to get worse, because what's happening is that in the new collective bargaining agreement, there's a clause in there that basically for the next 6 months afterward, in February and in July, you can now apply, if you've been in the league 20-plus years, to get 1.5 pension credits as opposed to just one. And so there's probably going to be about 20 more officials at least that'll be gone here in the next year or two by 2021. So now you have to find better ways to train them, better ways to hire them, because now in 2 years you're going to have the youngest group of officials you've ever had in the league, and it comes from a pool that's shrunk, because what's happening is that it's harder now for officials to come through high school. There's less college officials available. It's going to be a tough time.
Professor, did you hear Philip Rivers' celebration yesterday on Sunday against the Jaguars, where he said 90-yard touchdown and shouted it right in Yannick Ngakoue's ear?
I did not hear that, no.
Oh, it was fantastic. How do you think Dave Wyman's reaction? It was Rivers shouting repeatedly in the lineman's
you
ear who
hear
had
it?
Helped him up. Yes, yes,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, hold on.
Yeah,
we.
Stay humble. How do you think Dave Wyman reacted to that, John?
He probably wanted to deck him, sack him, beat
ding,
him
ding,
up.
Ding, 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 ding.
The smack talk was courtesy of one of the more punchable faces in the NFL, Philip Rivers, and now he's got one of the more punchable celebrations.
Yeah, that was Yannick Ngakoue. You know how he says, that's what I do? He should have punched him in the mouth and said, that's what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, how do you like it? He was right in his face.
He was so, in the video. He
insult, brother. The other part is very funny, because Wyman hates loud noises. So I can see
he hates loud noises.
Yes, if you laugh loudly next to him, if you shout near his ear, he will. And his
Brock's
default
clapping.
Yes, his default is to clench his fist and punch, like he's ready to fire. So you got to be careful about that. It would have been funny to see.
Wild, pretty wild scenario. But yeah, and now the story, one of the stories coming out today is that the Chargers might be the team interested in Cam Newton.
Ooh, that'd be interesting. Professor, we always appreciate our time. We look forward to talking to you tomorrow on the Morning Drive.
Okay, thanks.
That is John Clayton. Coming up next, we took a look inside the numbers about playoff chances, point differential, home games, buys. What makes the most difference when it comes to a team poised for a postseason run? It's important what I'll tell you how it relates to the Seahawks. That's next, Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
You know, I'm going to do it all right now.
You got to be hot going into the playoffs, right? Like, it's the team that has the best run, that's on the biggest roll. That's the team that tends to be the best when the playoffs start, right, Paul?
Well, typically. I mean, I feel that it helps. But I think if we were to go back to last year in particular, and we take a look at the New England Patriots, who had lost to the Dolphins on that lateral fest, played really poorly against the Pittsburgh Steelers, they go from not the best end of season to a Super Bowl run. I think a lot of it has to do with the one simple thing. Did you get a bye week? If you got a bye week, you're in great shape. After that, it does get a lot trickier.
Now, you tend to be right about the bye week. That does prove to be pretty important. However, when you look at it through the history, that the team with the longest winning streak entering the playoffs last year, Chicago. They'd won four in a row. I guess San Francisco had won five in a row, but that doesn't really count because they didn't really matter and all of that. They won four in a row, and they promptly lose in the wild card weekend to Philadelphia.
But they have Mitchell Trubisky, so, like, you get it.
The Chiefs, 2017, they'd won four in a row. To end it, they made a strong push to end it. They lose their wild card playoff game to Tennessee.
Having a
long winning streak entering the playoffs is not some sort of guarantee of success. It doesn't tend to be the rule that the team with the longest winning streak makes a long run. So anybody that thinks that, oh, Seattle having their losing streak snapped and they only have won five in a row and now they've got their final three that would have been much better for them. And the teams with the long losing streaks, that doesn't tend to correlate into deep playoff runs.
No, it doesn't. And I'm going to make a really quick flow chart here. And say you don't have a bye week. How did you play the last 6 weeks of the season? If you're good, you have a shot. If you're bad, were you injured? And the real factor in all of that, too, is how's your quarterback looking? Who is your quarterback? You mentioned the Chiefs at the end of the 2017 season. Alex Smith was still the quarterback then, and they had not turned things over to Patrick Mahomes yet. That is also a huge factor in there. It is very rare that you see a guy that is not that good of a quarterback all of a sudden put together a hot streak. And
Joe Flacco.
Right. It's only happened a couple of times. Like, you've seen it twice with Eli Manning. You've seen it with Joe Flacco and Nick Foles as well. How many times is that over, like, the last, like, 10 years or so? So you've seen it, like, four times over the last 10, 15 years?
The problem is that the Patriots have made the Super Bowl so many times.
They've broken it, right.
It eliminates, like, half your sample size yeah. where you're like, oh, that's just Brady. That doesn't count.
Yeah, if we were to make a flow chart, it's like, do you have a bye week? Do you have Tom Brady? Congratulations, yeah. You're in the Super Bowl. And then everything else is really tricky.
At point differential. That has become one of the more, and among statistically minded fans, has become one of the more telling indicators about whether or not your team is set up for a deep playoff run. Is your point differential good? And this is important for Seattle because Seattle's point differential is not very good. Do you think point differential is a great indicator of postseason success?
I don't think it's the best one, but it definitely can matter. If you are playing in a lot of close games, the odds are that you have been getting fortunate. And I would look specifically at last year's Houston Texans, who I covered firsthand. They did not have a very good point differential themselves. They won a lot of close games over the course of the season. And in the first round of the playoffs, where they had a home game against the Indianapolis Colts, the Colts kicked their butts. It wasn't close. They were blitzing off the edge. They confused Deshaun Watson. And they made the Texans look like we always consider the Texans to be, a team that's just not quite ready to take that next step into being an actually relevant NFL team. So I think point differential of late, that is definitely something that you can take a look at. I like to look at how you've done against teams over the course of the regular season that matter. And I suppose who matters is subjective. It usually means, do you have a good quarterback, and did you have a pretty good record over the course of the year? So to take a look at how the Seahawks have done against good teams this season, maybe that also is a little bit of a red flag, because you saw that they lost to the New Orleans Saints. You saw that they also lost to the Baltimore Ravens. And while they have beaten the San Francisco 49ers,
they're one of two teams to beat the 49ers, and they also beat the Vikings, though.
Right, but how much stock are we putting? I mean, if we were to look at the NFC right now, okay, how much stock are we putting into the San Francisco 49ers win is fantastic. How much stock are we putting in, though, to the Vikings? And how much stock now are we putting into the Rams? If you look at the games that they've had against legitimate contenders, I think there is a reason for concern, because they just did not really look as competitive as they have all season long against the top dogs, New Orleans, Baltimore. Some of it was because of self-inflicted mistakes, but against those teams, you don't really have the luxury of those.
Well, it's interesting about the point differential, because teams last season, the two teams in the NFC with the worst point differential, the lowest point differential, that was Dallas and Philadelphia. Both of them won their first-round playoff games. Both Dallas and Philadelphia had the two lowest point differentials, and they both won. The year before that, you had Tennessee, which was 2-3 the final month of the season, and had a negative 22 point differential. They beat the Chiefs in the wild card round.
That game, I'm never going to forget that the husk of mercenary hired gun Darrell Revis dropping that interception that Marcus Mariota threw on the goal line that Mariota caught, and everyone acting like that was a great play. I'm never going to forget that, because those fraudulent Titans had no business making the playoffs, and yet they won a game when they made it.
They did win a game, and I think all of this underscores what I was surprised to see, that point differential is not that big of an indicator about how a team does once it gets to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. That they're the streak that they're on, the record in their last five games, their winning streak, that doesn't even tend to be the greatest indicator of success. In the wild card round, home field advantage doesn't even matter.
No, it doesn't.
Since Russell Wilson came into the league in 2012, which I think should be that should be our own little AD line, like it'll be AR, like after Russell, like once he started, the home teams 14-14 in the wild card round. They're 14-14. It is different in the divisional round. They're 22-6, but even then, like, actually, home field advantage in the conference championship games has been more predictive of success than having a home field advantage in the divisional round, which is puzzling because you get a bye, which should be a huge advantage when it comes to that. I was surprised at all those things, and I think it underscored the reality to me that the NFL playoffs, more than any other playoff format, it's a crapshoot, man. You get into the tournament, and I agree.
Well, how about baseball? What about baseball? I think baseball is a little bit more of a crapshoot. I mean, you just saw a wild card team, the Nationals, who almost got taken out in that wild card play-in game, go on and win the World Series against the best team in the sport.
I don't think that baseball is more of a crapshoot. I think that baseball, the format for a postseason, the format they use for postseason, is most different from the format that leads to success. Yeah,
only
in
four
the regular
teams.
Season. It's you have fewer teams, but the emphasis on starting pitching, if you have three starters, three above average, if you have a dominant starting staff, it's a prohibitive advantage when it comes to the playoff format. It's not quite as different as a shootout is from a soccer match, but it's closer to that than any other sport. It's not like football. All of a sudden, it's like the quarterback becomes significantly more important in the playoffs. No, the quarterback's as important as he always is. It's just a one game and you're done sort of outset, which leaves more opportunities for make or break moments. But baseball, I think the formula, the ingredients for postseason success are significantly different than the ingredients for regular season.
Right. And you know, when I saw the Nationals make the playoffs, I actually thought that they had a fairly good shot to, at the very least, challenge for the World Series. I thought, okay, you get out of that wild card game, they have a very good shot to beat a team like the Dodgers. I didn't know that they would beat the Dodgers, but that's what they ultimately ended up doing, and they ultimately win the World Series and all that. As far as the playoffs, I do like the idea that it's a crapshoot, but I really think that it's a crapshoot for the teams that get the first round byes. And you're really playing the lottery if you're hoping that you can win a road game in the first round, that you can win a home game in the first round, and then go three games of playing consistent football in the league where there really isn't a whole lot that separates every single team, even the really bad ones, to go three games in a row where you're playing well on all cylinders, and then to win a Super Bowl. That's really tough to do.
Seahawks found out that Rashad Penny, he's going to be back in time for training camp next year, they hope. How does that change the formula, not just for Seattle's offense now, but going forward? Paul's going to tell us next on Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Rashad Penny's done for the season. That means that the Seahawks don't have two hammers that they can throw at a defense. And that definitely limits the running game. And it also affects the Seahawks, not just the rest of this year. It's going to affect them next year probably in a way too. I think the expectation for Rashad Penny is that he'll be back at some point around training camp. Will it be for the start of training camp? Will it be during training camp? Who knows? We have seen a lot of incredible recoveries from knee injuries over the last couple of seasons, but to put a lot of expectations on Penny, maybe that's not the most realistic expectation to have. But I'm really curious, Danny, as to what this running back position is going to look like both during these playoffs and even more so next year.
Weren't we just a month removed from saying that Penny, not us, but people saying Penny was a bust?
We were.
Wasn't it just a month ago that everybody's like, oh my gosh, they wasted a first-round pick, and now it's like, oh, the absence of Rashad Penny's going to change their formula going forward. It's a bummer. And injury, honestly, is part of the reason that I don't think you should draft a running back in the first round. It's also part of a reason that free agent contracts for running backs have gone down. It is, I don't want to say one of the most dangerous positions because all positions in the NFL are dangerous, but I think the performance at that position is more subject to being impacted by injury than maybe any other position, just because of the workload, how much it can change, the fine line between a guy that's going well and a guy that's all of a sudden Todd Gurley. Look, Todd Gurley is toggling back and forth on a weekly basis about whether or not he's good, and I think that in large part is based on how he feels and how strong his knee is. It's a bummer that Penny got hurt because he was coming on, and I think that he gave them a second, maybe even bigger home run threat than Carson. It doesn't change their formula for how they're going to – you're just going to see C.J. Procise get some opportunities and hopefully Travis Homer. In the offseason, I don't think it changes anything either. You're going to be staring straight ahead at the question of do you extend Chris Carson or not this offseason? My answer to that is no, I do not extend him. I'm not sure if that's what the Seahawks will do, but look, I just think that everything the NFL tells you that that is a position that is, you can find a guy to do that job.
You can find a guy, but you have to be careful with how often you are willing to tell yourself that you can find a guy, especially when you have at least one and possibly two. You're so right about how we've felt about Penny all season long. I think a lot of people thought to themselves, man, Penny can't even get on the field. With the amount of carries that Chris Carson is getting, that can't be a good sign for Rashad Penny. Then he has the game against the Philadelphia Eagles, and we all change our mind. And then he continues by following that up with another nice performance against the Minnesota Vikings, and we think to ourselves, wow, this 1-2 combination might be one of the best in the NFL. And then he goes down. You mentioned Chris Carson, and you mentioned Chris Carson potentially getting into extension conversation with a year left on his contract going into next season. Wouldn't he have to force the issue? Wouldn't he have to hold out for the Seahawks to even entertain maybe giving him a new contract? Because otherwise,
they've typically done extensions for guys. If they stick true to their program, they're probably going to extend him. We do have to tell you, we're going to announce a code word for your chance to win tickets to see the Seahawks host the Cardinals December 22nd. Our winner this morning will receive two pregame sideline passes. Actually, I think I'm going to be on the sideline with one of those pregame passes. Well, not one of the two that were given away, but two other ones. Be there with my big-headed nephew, John Riley. You can spread holiday cheer with gifts from the Seahawks Pro Shop with weekly deals happening all month long. You'll find something for all the 12s on your list. Shop at one of their four locations online at Seahawks.com/Pro Shop. That code word, it's RUSH. Enter it at 710sports.com/win. RUSH, R-U-S-H. R-U-S-H by the end of our show to be entered to win those two tickets.
R-U-S-H. Sean Connery?
Yeah, to be entered to win two tickets to see the Seahawks host the Cardinals plus those sideline passes. If the Seahawks stick true to their program, they'll extend Chris Carson, which honestly I think is a big reason why you'll see them do it, because that's, hey, you give the guy an extension with a year left on his deal.
So they're going to do right by him. And this,
yes, and I think that holds true to it. If I was them, I would be bare knuckles about it, though. And I would say, look, that's a position where production tends to change over time. And that has not worked out great for us when we've continuously extended guys. And nobody else in the league is doing it, so we're not going to bid against ourselves.
CJ Procise does not strike me as someone who's going to be able to fill that void with Penny out the rest of the year. I would be curious to see if Travis Homer at least gets some reps the rest of the season. That might be the one thing that Carson has going for him is that Penny got hurt, because Procise, now he does have a little leverage.
Procise is going to be he's going to have two or three plays over these next three games, Paul, that are going to make you, they are going to tantalize you. And you're going to feel the tease that Seattle has felt for 2.5 years, because he looked great as a rookie. His ability's never been a problem. It's always been his availability. There's going to be a couple things. The guy's got great hands. He can catch out of the backfield. They're going to do things to utilize him in the game plan, and you are going to be tantalized by him. But in the end, the fact that he's not really been available for 2.5 years probably looms larger. I'm excited to see Homer. He's fast. Homer's a blaze, like absolute burner. I'm excited to see Homer.
He deserves an opportunity. I think he deserves 1-2 carries at the very least. You're playing the Panthers on Sunday. I know Hawksplainers, they play one. It's going to be a one-score game. Okay, fine. I'll agree with you. Fine. It's going to be a one-score game on Sunday. Homer deserves a couple of carries. I think especially with how cool, calm, and as he called it, chilled he was against the Minnesota Vikings on that fake punt. Come on. What's wrong with giving him a couple of snaps on offense? What are they going to expect? You know, it might honestly be a nice little wrinkle that puts a defense in a bind because they don't know what to expect.
You mentioned leverage for Chris Carson, leverage with the injury to Rashad Penny. Doesn't Penny's injury make you more reluctant to give out an extension to a running back? Doesn't Penny's injury underscore and emphasize the fragility of that position?
Oh, definitely. And I mean, it emphasizes, be careful about drafting a guy in the first round, because also take a look at New England and this nothing that they're getting out of Sony Michel right now as well.
Like, I was for years I yelled at because they didn't draft Sony Michel. Seattle had the opportunity to draft him, he didn't.
Rephrase that and now yell about Nick Chubb.
It's Nick Chubb. Okay, yeah. My bad. It's Nick Chubb.
Confusing your Georgia running backs.
Okay, yeah, because last year people liked Sony Michel, right? Like that
they
was
did.
He was great.
Down the stretch, I mean, the Patriots changed their identity in the playoffs, and the reason that they were able to win a Super Bowl is because they could actually run the football. They can't do that this year.
Huh.
Yeah.
It almost seems like on a week-to-week basis, people change their opinion on whether or not a running back is worth it.
Ooh. Are we on to something here? Does that mean that we shouldn't give an extension? Definitely, it's possible as to what happens, and that's why people are feeling as good as they were about Rashad Penny because of that two-week stretch that he had. But it's definitely very possible that against the Rams on Sunday, had he played the entirety of the game, that he wouldn't have done that much. He did have that nice screen at the beginning of things. Whatever the case, the Seahawks, I think, are in a very difficult position because they can't be quite the thumpers that they would like to be offensively down the stretch with just Chris Carson. It's Danny and Gallant, Danny O'Neill, and Paul Gallant. Up next, it's Blue 42 with Michael Bumpus. We asked Michael, what is Tyler Lockett not doing for the Seahawks to not really give him that many looks over the last couple of weeks? He's going to answer that question for us next. Don't go anywhere.